Accession number 9696, Reel 1.
Admiral Gibson, Reel 1. Where were you born, Admiral Gibson?
In Suffolk.
Whereabouts?
It's called Wicker Market.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a soldier.
And what was your education?
I was educated at Woodbridge School in Suffolk.
And how old were you when you left?
16.
To do what?
Run away to sea.
Did you actually run away?
No, I went to sea. I went to sea as an apprentice in the merchant service.
Why did you decide on that?
Because I couldn't pass any examinations at all at that time. I was what they call a late developer.
So how did you come to be in Her Majesty's forces?
Well, when I was an apprentice in the merchant service, I joined the RNR as a midshipman. And in 1937, when there was a threat of war, they gave an opportunity for people to turn over to the Royal Navy. And I was one of those who did in 1937.
Why did you decide on that?
Oh, I always wanted to be in the Navy.
When Chamberlain declared war on Germany, what was your reaction to that?
No idea. Same as everybody else's. But we weren't really surprised at anything.
Were you despondent about it?
Not a bit. I mean, not I wasn't despondent, no. When young people are not despondent, I mean, I didn't think it was a good idea or anything at all.
Why not?
Well, because if you're in the Navy and there's a war, you're liable to get bent, aren't you?
Were you confident about Britain's ability to handle Germany militarily?
I never thought about it. One was brought up more or less to have confidence in those days, yes.
How did you come to be in the Fleet Air Arm?
Oh, I always wanted to fly, so I applied for it.
When was that?
Very early on, 37, I think.
What kind of planes were you flying at the beginning of the war?
Well, at the beginning of the war, I hadn't quite finished my flying training. My first operational aeroplane was a Gladiator.
What were they like to fly?
Very nice.
In what way?
Well, they were more like a sports car. You know, they're nice. Young men like flying an aeroplane like a Gladiator. It was a biplane and it was very maneuverable. Had plenty of power. It wasn't any good as a fighter, of course, but it was out of date.
Were there any problems with it?
None at all. No. I mean, apart from his ability to fight the enemy, which is fairly important.
Too slow.
It was too slow, yes, it was.
Which was the first vessel that you joined after qualifying as a pilot?
The Glorious, in the Norwegian campaign.
Had you expected to go to Norway?
Oh, yes.
What kind of a ship was you to serve aboard?
Well, I was a very junior officer, and she was very comfortable indeed.
Was she a happy ship?
Well, I know that all these things are said about the Glorious nowadays. In fact, I'm just reading a new book about her by John Winton. But when I was in the Glorious, all I had to do was to do what I was told, and I didn't really get involved in any of the unhappiness that was going on, I believe, which was mainly among the captain and his heads of departments. I would say that for the average junior officer, she was a very happy ship indeed. I was only on board her about a fortnight or 3 weeks.
Were you aware of any friction amongst the superior officers?
Oh, yes, very much so, because eventually, not while it was going on, but eventually the Commander Au was put ashore. And obviously that didn't mean that everything was smooth.
What were your duties on board ship during
the... Well, fighter pilot in the Gladiators, 804 Squadron.
Whereabouts off the Norwegian coast were you operating?
I've no idea.
Was it the northern part or the southern part?
I don't know. We didn't know at the time, I don't think. I mean, all we knew was that we were protecting the fleet from German attack. And I've no doubt that we had maps strapped on our knee, but I can't remember where they were. I mean, as far as navigation was concerned, we were just flying over the sea. I don't think we were inside of land at all.
So you were patrolling Her Majesty's ships?
Yes, what they call combat air patrol.
Did the Germans attack whilst you were on
board? Yes, once. During the time that I was on board, the Germans attacked a lot of times, but they only attacked once when I was in the air. And that was some Junkers 87s. And it was a great mix-up, and some of them were shot down.
In what sense was it a mix-up?
Well, they were a mix-up of aeroplanes, all milling around in the sky.
About how, in what kind of strength did they attack?
I don't remember. I speak probably about 20 of them or something, but I don't know. I don't remember.
And how many British planes would have been involved approximately?
I can't remember that either. I think there was probably about 4 of us.
So you were greatly outnumbered?
Well, greatly outnumbered, but there were no German fighters involved, just the bombers.
And the 4 craft were all from the Glorious?
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me about what you actually saw during the...
I'm afraid I don't remember, except that I do remember that one of the Germans had a red spinner, which obviously one would remember because one saw it. And I think that he was shot down by something or other.
What's a spinner?
It's the cap on the front of the propeller. Very conspicuous. In fact, it's very inadvisable to have a coloured spinner because people were inclined to go for you.
Did that ever happen in the fleet air arm? That people had that type of thing?
Probably. I don't really remember that either. You must forgive me for not remembering.
About how long did the actual aerial action last? Just a few minutes?
About 5 minutes. Yes.
Did the Junkers score any success against the British ships?
No.
Can you remember which particular ships they were after?
No, I can't. I think we were in company with the Argonaut. I don't remember.
Did all 4 British planes survive?
Oh, Lord, yes.
And all 4 of them were Gladiators, were they?
Yes. I should think the greatest, quite truthfully, the greatest danger to the British planes was from our own guns, because the Junkers wouldn't normally attack fighters at all. In fact, they were one of the few German aircraft that the Gladiators were capable of dealing with them, as far as speed and performance was concerned.
What tactics would you adopt for tackling a Junkers 87?
Well, it depends what the Junkers 87 was doing. You just went for him, that was all.
Did you shoot any down yourself?
No. No.
What was the morale like aboard the Glorious during the Norway campaign?
It seemed to me to be very good. My morale was not very good because I'd only just learned to fly and I was rather nervous about Dick landing. And the commander flying, who was J.B. Heath, was an extraordinarily nice man. he didn't use the arrestor wires, which confronted a problem to me because I wasn't quite so confident as some people were.
Did you have any mishap?
No, not at all.
Did anything else happen of note off the coast of Norway that we should mention?
No, not on that occasion in the Glorious. We disembarked a squadron of RAF gladiators who went to a lake, and they were lost. They were all bombed out of existence. I just stayed in the Glorious for a fortnight, and then I was transferred to 803 Squadron, which had skuas, and that was in the Ark Royal. And I did the rest of the Norwegian campaign in the Ark Royal.
How did the Ark Royal compare with the Glorious?
Well, she was a modern ship, and she'd been designed as an aircraft carrier. I should say she was an exceptionally nice ship to serve in.
And 803 Squadron as compared with 804?
Well, they were both very good squadrons. Excellent.
And what about the skua to fly in?
Well, the skua was a fighter dive bomber. It was a very successful dive bomber, but it was no good as a fighter, although it was used as that practically all the time. I mean, we catch up with a Heinkel 111 and Junkers 87, but if we came across some German fighters, then we had an inferior performance, very inferior. It was also a very funny aeroplane to fly. It was unstable in many ways, but I quite liked it, though. It's very strong, built like a battleship.
In what sense was it unstable?
Well, like any aeroplane that's unstable, it used to do things for no particular reason at all. It would suddenly find yourself skidding, or if you let go, it was very difficult to trim so that it flew, more or less by itself. It was a pretty unstable aeroplane.
Did you feel less happy with it than the...
Oh, no, I was perfectly happy with it. It was a much easier deck landing aeroplane than the Gladiator, but you could see where you were going when you were landing, and you didn't have to look over the sides. Another thing it was unstable about was that it was supposed not to be able to recover from a spin. Actually, I spun it several times, and it recovered, but it was not supposed to be able to recover from a spin. In fact, it had a tail parachute, which it was supposed to release when you got in the spin, and then the whole aeroplane was hung on the tail parachute. I'm not quite sure what was supposed to happen then. It never happened to me. I saw it used once in Oran with one of our petty officers who got into a spin, and he simply went straight down into the water.
Did you put it into a spin deliberately?
Oh, no, if you tighten up the turn, which you might well do in a dogfight, it would suddenly spin by itself. There's no question about that at all. Any aeroplane would, if you were clumsy with it.
Was the role of 803 Squadron during the Battle for Norway the same role?
No, it wasn't. It was to provide fighter protection, in which it was very successful, inasmuch as it could catch up with a Heinkel 111, which is what the Germans used mostly, and we rarely saw fighters out at sea. But it was also used quite a lot in the dive bombing role during the Norwegian campaign.
About how many sorties would you have flown at that time?
Well, I have no idea, but we were very busy. I mean, about four sorties a day. They were long sorties, too, they were 3 hours. And, of course, during that Norwegian campaign, it was in the summertime, and in the Arctic, we had an awful lot of daylight, so you had to go on flying.
Was 3 hours the limit of its performance?
Oh, yes, just about. And there's certainly the limit of one's bum sitting on a parachute, I can assure you.
What kind of dive bombing targets did you go against?
Well, historically, before I joined, the squadron, as you probably know, actually sunk the German cruiser Königsberg in Bergen. That was 803 squadron with 801 squadron. And that showed it to be a very successful dive bomber. We dive bombed various targets in Norway ashore, and we once dive bombed the Scharnhorst in Trondheim Harbour. But of course, the trouble with dive bombing is that in order to get ahead when you're dive bombing, which is a very effective way of bombing, but you've got to point your airplane straight at the target, and that gives the gunners a no deflection shot. So you're really reenacting something very like the charge of the light brigade, if there's any opposition. And also, you've probably got, sometimes we had fighters around as well, which made it very tricky.
What kind of German fighters were there?
Oh, the ME-109s and the ME-110.
Which were the more formidable of the two?
I don't really know. I didn't like either. As far as the skill was concerned, it was death, whichever one you met, unless you were very lucky.
How close to them did they come to you?
How close?
Yes.
Oh, very close. I didn't go around with a tape measure, but they were close.
Can you describe the dive bombing of the Scharnhorst?
Yes, I can indeed. Now, this is a very famous operation, which has had one whole book written about it by Major Partridge, called Operation Scar, and is mentioned in several other books. And it was typical of bad planning, and an operation planned by men who really knew, didn't know their job. Unfortunately, I have to say this. It was when we were leaving Norway, the Glorious had been sunk, I think, and we went into Trondheim at... We took off at about midnight from the Ark Royal, and we struck the Scharnhorst at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was planned that we should make our landfall in a lighthouse, which I think was about 60 miles from Trondheim, and then fly to Trondheim. Now, to do that produced a complete certainty. The Germans would know we were coming because the lighthouse keeper would just ring up Trondheim and say the boys are on their way. So there was no surprise. Although it was all carried out in the middle of the night, it was daylight, it's a very memorable operation because we knew that it was a nasty one. We had to wait around till midnight before we took off. And we got to this lighthouse. There was 803 Squadron and 801 Squadron. 15 aeroplanes altogether in the striking force. And I was leading the rear section of three of 803. And when we got to Trondheim, there were hundreds of German fighters in the air. Well, I say hundreds, there were many German fighters in the air. And there was a complete, very intense flak. And we had some way to go under those conditions to get to the ship. And we were being picked off as we went along. And we eventually carried out a dive bombing attack on the ship. And we didn't get a single hit. Why that was, I should think, was because most of the experienced pilots who were good at dive bombing had by then had been killed or taken prisoner. And most of the pilots in the squadrons were people like myself who was straight from the flying schools. And when I was actually in the dive, I had four aeroplanes, four Messerschmitts on my tail, which my observer told me about. My observer's name was Gordon Smith. And, however, they didn't seem to... It was all very confused, but they didn't seem to shoot me down. And when I'd got rid of the bomb, I put up my flaps and went down into Trondheim itself, right flat on the deck. There was a bit of mist about. And I escaped like that. I mean, I was very low. In fact, I remember on leaving Trondheim by means of a road led out of Trondheim, there was a bank on the side of the road, and I remember very distinctly actually looking up at a horse on the bank, so it must have been extremely low. On the way out, on the way back to the ship, we met four twin-engine aeroplanes. I thought, my God, here's some more Messerschmitt 110s, but they turned out to be our Blenheim fighter escort, which was supposed to beat up the local aerodrome at Vannes, and they were about 20 minutes late, so we called them up by oldest lamp, and I suppose they must have gone home. When we eventually got to the Ark Royal, Sir Charles Forbes, who was the commander-in-chief of the Home Fleet, had just taken the whole of the Home Fleet into a fog bank, which didn't make things any more easy or less stress-wrecking. However, I think we were the last to get on, my observer and I, and we took off with 15 aeroplanes, and we came back with 7, as far as I remember, although I think Major Partridge in his book says we only came back with three, but I don't think it's quite right. I think 7 out of 8 or 15 got back, which is a very high casualty rate.
You said, I think, or give the impression that you and your comrades were apprehensive before you.
Oh, very, yes, scared stiff.
Were you critical before you left of the planning of the exercise?
No, not really. I mean, one realised that in wartime, perhaps one had to take a few risks. No, I don't think that was so.
What was the morale like when you all got back?
Well, very sad that we hadn't all got back, and we hadn't been. We were very, very pleased that one had personally managed to get back.
You talked about using the road out of Trondheim. Was that the road to the north or the south?
I can't remember. I didn't use the road. I just happened to be flying along it.
So... The Scharnhorst was anchored in Trondheim Fjord.
Yes, with quite a large number of German ships, so there's quite a large amount of gunnery coming up at us.
You attributed the lack of success of the dive bombing to the inexperience of the pilots.
Well, I mean, there were some experienced pilots among us, but it was difficult to, I suppose, to concentrate with all that gunnery going on and with fighters coming along behind. Anyway, we didn't get any.
What do you think if you had been more experienced, is there anything specific that you think you would have done that you didn't do at the time?
Oh, no.
Were there any... What other targets, apart from the Scharnhorst, did you have in Norway? Other ships?
Well, in my case, it was mostly army installations. We were very successful occasionally in attacking German headquarters and vehicles and tanks and things like that.
Any ammunition dumps?
I can't remember that at all.
So you didn't have any mighty explosions when you...
No, mighty explosions.
What was the German opposition like with the army targets?
Oh, flak. Flak, mostly.
Presumably much less intense than with a Scharnhorst.
Oh, yes. Very much less intense. But at the same time, though, one was hit quite a lot, you know, with small flak. No, I don't mean personally, but one's aeroplane was full of holes. And our ground crew used to put canvas patches on them and paint swastikas on the canvas patches. That was good for their morale.
Did the holes make much difference to the performance of the plane?
Oh, no. One wouldn't have flown it otherwise.
So, did you have anything more vital hit on the plane, apart from body weapons?
I don't think. I was hit in a wireless set once. It's destroyed my wireless set. But no. And my observer was never hit.
Who was your observer? Can you remember?
His name was Pat Gordon Smith. I don't know where he is now. Lost touch with him.
You said your other duty was fighter protection.
Yes.
What exactly did that involve?
Well, when the Germans were trying to bomb the fleet, which they were always trying to do, we used to go and intercept. We intercept the fighters. I don't think we had any radar in the Ark Royal. In fact, I know we didn't. The cruiser Sheffield had radar. And we used to use Sheffield's radar. But it was surprisingly successful because all the orders were given in Morse code, which is a funny kind of fighter direction, but it did work.
Did the Germans launch many attacks?
Oh, yes, all the time. Constant attacks.
With Junkers again?
No, mostly with Heinkels. High-level bombing.
Was that any more successful than the Dardanelles?
No. Oh, it was. Yes. Oh, no, not more successful than the dive bombing, but they had quite a few successes, mostly against transports and other ships. They didn't hit the Ark Royal. They missed a very short. They had quite a few near misses.
Did you shoot any of the German planes down?
Yes, we'd had some successes.
Your plane personally?
Yes. I don't remember how many, but when you ask me that, I can't remember. It's not a large number, but a few.
These were Heinkels?
Yes.
Were any of the captured Germans brought aboard the Ark Royal, do you remember?
No.
Do you think any of them survived?
No idea. I'm afraid one doesn't bother about that in wartime. Although I used to a little bit. On one occasion, we shot down a Heinkel and the crew in the water, and I spoke to the captain about it, told him where they were when we got back. But I got the impression that everybody was too busy to bother about that, which is quite true, of course. We couldn't detach a destroyer to go and pick those feathers up. But I expect they had an air sea rescue organization of their own, of some sort or other.
That was off Norway, was it?
I should think they probably did have it.
Was that off Norway happened? Were there any submarine scares off the Norwegian coast? Or any submarine attacks?
I don't remember. Don't remember at all.
Were any of the skuas lost on landing or takeoff?
Well, no. There were a lot of skuas lost by enemy action, of course, including my own CO was shot down. But and we lost a lot of Trondheim and other places. But we didn't have any deck accidents with the skua, which is a very safe deck landing aeroplane. But I remember landing on board.